Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. It's Dr. Tony and I together again. Yay! And we're going to talk about something that not a lot of people think about, unfortunately, until it's almost too late. We're going to be discussing osteoporosis. It's known as the silent thief because that's your bone, you know, that's your bones breaking down and becoming weaker. And a lot of times you don't know you have it until maybe you reach age 65, and that's when you get your DEXA scan to check your bone mineral density, otherwise known as BMD, and you might find you have osteoporosis, or you get a fracture, and they investigate because it's a fragility fracture, which means you break a bone from like standing or sitting, especially like in the wrist or hip. That can be a problem, or the spine, because you know, we see kids when they fall, they could fall off monkey bars, and knock on wood, most of the time they're okay. But as we get older, we trip off the curb, we brace ourselves with our arms, and we break a wrist. And that can be a warning sign of osteoporosis. I was curious if I had osteoporosis. It hasn't been investigated. I think when I did break my arm, I actually had a fracture in my radial head when I was 36 years old. So many doctors were asking me how bad the fall was because technically, yes, it was from standing, but I was kind of running, walking quick, and I tripped on a treadmill and it kind of forced me down more than if I had just tripped without, you know, being kind of flung forward. So they never did investigate if I had low bone mineral density, but osteoporosis does run in my family. My father actually has it, not my mom. So most people think it's more women than men, but my father, my uncle have it. So there is a genetic component as well. And then I did break my toe when I was 41 years of age, you know, rushing around by accident. I, you know, didn't see the door open to the bathroom and I kicked it with my toe and that broke my toe. But that's not considered a fragility fracture. So if you break your skull or your toe with just kind of a fall from standing or sitting, that's not a red flag. But I want you to think about if you've ever broken a bone, have you had a fragility fracture? Tony, have you ever broken anything?
You know, and I'm knocking on wood right now because I really don't think I have broken anything. I may have broken my baby toes, either, you know, a break or a really severe sprain, but I didn't even really get those checked out because really you can't really do much with baby toes. But again, nothing lately. And even with you say, like, I am typically more worried about Frankie kind of falling and breaking a bone, where it's like, I should really be more concerned about my bones and my bone health, given my age, given, you know, where I am in this whole hormonal fluctuation journey and transition, into menopause. And really until looking at all of the research around, bone health and osteoporosis, I really hadn't thought of it that much. I don't typically put as much emphasis as maybe I should, as not only as a woman going into menopause, and even truthfully with my patients as well. And so I'm so glad we're doing this episode because, again, like you said, Lisa, it's so key to be really aware of it as we age, look at our risk factors, look at what you know, we may be ahead of us, especially since typically screening for your bone mineral density doesn't happen until 65. And by that time, it might be too late. And there's so much we can do now to really help to support our bones that involves calcium, but it isn't just all about calcium.
That's right. I think you're going to feel empowered after this episode. So it's not all downhill. There's definitely things you can do to maintain muscle mass to help prevent further breakdown. But why we're also talking about this is because people don't realize once you break a bone, like a hip especially, your life is typically impacted in the long term, and the mortality rate in the first year after a hip fracture is approximately 20%. So 20% of people that get a hip fracture within the first year will die. And from those that survive, about 20% will require long-term nursing home care, and 60% don't fully regain pre-fracture independence. So you really lose that independence, that functionality, that kind of control over what you can and can't do. So we really want to prevent that from happening. And we do know we lose bone mass. It's accelerated during and after menopause, but typically adult women lose 1-2% of bone per year. And it's accelerated further during the menopause transition. So we want to keep our bones strong and healthy, you know, get them kind of to rebuild, which exercise does. And we'll talk about that while our hormones are still, you know, at the decent level. We know in perimenopause, estrogen can be fluctuating, but estrogen has that anabolic capability, kind of like a testosterone. We know estrogen helps bone health. So that's why menopause is one of the major risk factors, especially early menopause, for bone mineral density reductions and osteopenia and osteoporosis. So I guess we should talk about the difference between those two, right, Tony?
That might be a good idea. So, I mean, when we think about bone health, we often think, oh, you know, osteoporosis, don't want to get osteoporosis. But again, there's the osteoporosis and osteopenia, which are kind of the two different diagnoses that you can have when it comes to bone health. Osteoporosis really does mean, you know, porous bones or, you know, bones with holes, whereas osteopenia is more of a bone deficiency. So whether you're diagnosed with either of those, kind of once you get that bone mineral density scan, it depends on the amount of bone lost. So while, you know, osteopenia is still loss of your bone, osteoporosis is when it is more kind of at an extreme level. And again, you really won't necessarily find out whether you have osteoporosis or osteopenia until you get a bone scan. And so that would either be typically age 65, which is when, you know, typical screening starts with a DEXA scan. Or again, we can talk about different reasons why it would be a good idea to really advocate for yourself to get early screening for bone mineral density. So that DEXA scan is it's really stands for dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. What?
I know, it's a tongue twister.
A bit, right? And that's why it's called a DEXA scan. And really, it just is where you lie down, a small X-ray detector scans your spine, one hip, both typically. It's safe, it's painless. Again, you're exposed to a certain amount of radiation, but it's typically, I mean, the same amount of radiation if you were to fly from Toronto to Vancouver, which is really, you know, a 5-hour plane ride. So it's not a huge dose of radiation that you really need to be concerned about. And it really picks up on just how light transmits through the bone. So again, if your bones are more thin, more light gets through. If your bones are more thick, then very little gets through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good, you know, to know your bone mineral density, but, you know, you could have low bone mineral density, but never get a fracture. You could have higher bone mineral density and still get a fracture. So we'll go through some other risk factors for fractures. And some of them I think are going to surprise you that you may not have thought about. But once you get that DEXA scan, you get your BMD, bone mineral density score, your test results, if you will. So it's called what they usually use is the T score. So it's comparing your bones to the bones of an average young 30-year-old adult when the bone health is at its maximal level. So usually between 30 to 35 is when your bones are at their peak strength, and then it does degrade. We talked about at that 1 to 2% per year. So the T score is expressed in standard deviation units. You don't really need to know that, but you've probably seen the numbers. So minus, it's a minus score. So that means it's, you know, kind of worse than that healthy, in quotes, 30-year-old. So anything between -1 and -2.5, you're osteopenic. So meaning your bone density is worse than the 30-year-old by 1 to 2.5 standard deviations. And then anything lower than -2.5, so -2.6, -2.7, -4, -5, then you're diagnosed as osteoporotic. So you have osteoporosis. There's different calculators you can use that you can plug in your bone mineral density score as well as other factors. It's called like a FRAX score. So it plugs in, you know, your numbers so you can calculate your 10-year probability of hip fracture or major osteoporotic fracture. So of a vertebral bone, of the forearm or of the humerus, the proximal humerus, so a part of the leg. So it takes into account, yes, your bone mineral density, but it takes into account your age, your gender, fracture history, and steroid use. Also, if there's been a parent who's had a hip fracture, if you suffer from other conditions that may increase your risk of osteoporosis, as well as if you smoke or have two or more drinks per day, a lot of people don't realize that can increase your risk of fracture, whether it's, you know, you're not getting, you know, there's more of that diuretic effect and you're urinating out some of the nutrients you need for bone health. You're not getting quality sleep, but also you're more likely to fall if you're a little bit inebriated, right? So tripping and falling is a big risk factor for fractures, obviously.
Absolutely. And again, you know, it's really interesting again, because, you know, it's not that having a low bone mineral density is going to impact your health. But again, it's whether you have a higher fracture risk with falls, because again, the falls can impact your health. The fractures can impact your health for sure. And also, you know, it can be, especially if you do have certain risk factors and you can catch that screening before you get into a more severe osteoporosis, when you maybe do have some bone loss, osteopenia, then again, there's more that you could look at doing to support, you know, really reducing the rate of losing more bone and really looking at a preventing going into osteoporosis. So again, you know, we want to really look at, okay, before we're 65, what can we do? And, you know, would early screening make sense at all? You know, why would a woman who is in perimenopause or early menopause really look at getting a DEXA scan or looking to figure out what their bone mineral density test score is? And really, you know, does it make sense to really push to find that out? And, you know, you already mentioned, Lisa, that, you know, smoking can have an impact. Alcohol actually can have an impact on that. If someone already has had a fracture, again, whether it's a fragility fracture, like you mentioned, Lisa, you know, kind of from standing after the age of 40, or anyone even who has had any kind of fracture, at 50 years of age or higher really fits into a category where early screening does make sense. Someone who has had a parent who has had a hip fracture, has that family history. People who have a lower body weight, people who, like you mentioned, who have a prolonged use of certain medications like steroids, like glucocorticoids. There's also some other high-risk medications that do fit in there, like proton pump inhibitors or PPIs. Those are typically, you know, medications that reduce stomach acid and, you know, include even over-the-counter medications like Nexium Dexilant and even, you know, Pantoloc and those kind of things. They can impact fracture risk. And so, you know, can definitely be impacted that way. And also people who have had different conditions that reduce the ability for their body to absorb those minerals that are so important for our bone health, like celiac disease, or people who have anorexia or issues with disordered eating can definitely be included in, you know, those disorders that are strongly associated with like really rapid bone loss and or fracture. Also, women who have been, who go into menopause early, you know, women who go into menopause before the age of 45, that's considered premature menopause. And that would definitely put you in that category to really look at getting that early screening for your bone mineral density testing before age of 65.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all important to note. And then what increases your risk of fractures? So not getting a regular eye exam is a big one, and having poor eyesight because you're more likely to trip or bang into things, right? Having like carpet with kind of shag carpet or your kids' toys around, you know, those are easy to trip over and you can hurt yourself. Those can be big ones. Hearing and balance issues that can happen as we age, having low level lighting. I mentioned those obstacles, you know, having stairs that you have to take if you're feeling less stable, and even not having assistive devices in the bathroom. So as people get older, that's why we have those. And then being careful with snow shoveling. Yep. I was going to say shoe snoveling. It's like a tongue twister to me right now. Snow shoveling, having slippery outdoor conditions, and even taking sedative medications, whether it's for sleep, whether it's for anxiety, like benzodiazepines, that can increase your risk of falls and fractures. So really being cautious in respect to those. And then you mentioned, Tony, yeah, it's interesting, the risk of osteoporosis goes up as your body weight gets lower. And why is that? Because you need weight to actually put force or kind of a like strength on a tensile force on the bones. So that keeps them strong, right? It's kind of like you're carrying around some extra weight, some handheld dumbbells, and that keeps your bones stronger. When your body weight is too low, there's not that same weight bearing, which is why also strength training is so important, right? Because when you're lifting weights, you're doing body weight exercises, that the muscles pull on the bones that they're attached to, and the bones have to heal and repair, and that's what gets them strong. So ideally, we're doing strength training when we're still having a cycle, when our estrogen and testosterone levels are getting to their peak levels. You know, you can still get gains from exercise in terms of bone density effects postmenopausally, but if you can start sooner, you're going to get even more gains, you know, more bang for your buck, if you will, as you're having more of those hormones cycling around because your body's more in that anabolic, that building phase, right? So we know the strength training and then getting in enough protein is so key. So we should link back to the episode with Dr. Andrea Prue, where she's talking about strength training. And I know we've discussed protein a lot in some of the episodes and how much you need to get.
Yeah, absolutely, Lisa. We'll put that in the show notes. And I think that does, you know, segue really nicely into, well, okay, what do we need to look at in terms of how we can really support our bone health and prevent that bone loss now, you know, in perimenopause as we're going into menopause? And that's where absolutely, you know, protein is key. And it's interesting, you know, they've done some research looking at vegan and vegetarian diets. And that's where, especially when that includes lower level of protein lower levels of protein intake, that means that people who are having a vegan diet, a purely plant-based diet, did have a really almost half a 50% increase in the risk of all fractures. So, you know, there's can definitely be an impact on bone when you don't have that higher source of protein. But again, having proper muscle mass and really preventing that sarcopenia as well, that loss of muscle as we get older, is key. And I think what's really important as well, as you know, the type of protein really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's plant-based protein, it doesn't matter if it's animal sourced protein. We just need enough of that protein. And it can really actually surprise a lot of my patients when I talk about, you know, making sure that they're getting enough protein, because it's just not something that they think about. And a lot of women don't realize the benefits and even the amounts of protein that they should really be looking at getting. And this is where really aiming for 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day is really the aim, you know, and you can get it from a number of different food sources, again, whether that is animal-based or even some plant-based protein. But again, making sure that you're really getting a complete balance of all of the amino acids in protein is really key.
Yeah, it's so important, really, as, you know, people get into their senior years, you see higher consumption of carbohydrates, sugars, maybe not as much emphasis on protein, and we need to keep that intake up. And then, you know, most people are familiar with the use of calcium, and we'll link to an Osteoporosis Canada calcium calculator, but it's good to see how much you're getting on a typical day, and you can get it from non-dairy sources as well, like tahini, almond milk, almonds. A lot of the non-dairy yogurts are enriched, so you can check the labels there. Collards, kale, cooked collards, cooked kale, tofu has added calcium in it. If you like to eat the canned salmon with the bones, I know not everybody likes that, but you get the calcium from the bones. You know, soy milk is fortified, chia seeds have calcium. The typical recommended dietary allowance for women 19 to 50 years of age is 1,000 milligrams. For age 51 and above, it's 1,300 milligrams of calcium per day. A lot of people, if they're focusing on some of those food sources, may get about half or more from their food sources. So they may need to look at supplementing with a calcium supplement, ideally mixed with magnesium, some vitamin D, maybe some vitamin K2, so that the calcium goes to the bones where we want it to go. You know, we don't want calcium to go to the arteries. It can be part of atherosclerotic plaque. So that's why we like a nice, well-rounded supplement. You know, if you can tolerate dairy, great. If you're sensitive to cow's dairy, goat, sheep, and buffalo dairy are great alternatives. If you're sensitive to those, then I would recommend doing that Osteoporosis Canada calculator, because it'll show you which foods are high in calcium too. And then you can get an idea of what you need to get to reach your target. So really being strategic about your calcium intake is really important.
And everyone who's been listening to me probably knows that I am such a big fan of magnesium. And again, like you said, Lisa, that's another nutrient that we really need to make sure that we're getting enough of. And I always really consider most of us are magnesium, you know, insufficient, if not completely magnesium depleted. And again, that's a really essential cofactor for the enzymes that are related to our bone matrix and how it's formed. It really does stimulate the proliferation of the osteoblast cells that really do help with that. And it can also impact, again, vitamin D too. So, and when there's that, decrease, then there can be higher levels of the cells that break down the bones, the osteoclasts. Anyway, it's really key to be getting some magnesium-rich foods. And if you're not having enough of those magnesium-rich foods, that's where making sure that you get in some magnesium in a supplement form is really key. So that's where definitely looking at doing, a supplement with calcium and magnesium can be helpful. Some of the magnesium-rich foods, really whole grains, dark leafy green veggies. Often, dairy will have magnesium in there, but also, beans, legumes, nuts, seeds like pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, almonds, cashews, black beans, edamame, but even things like spinach and potatoes and rice and yogurt and oats will have some magnesium in there as well.
Yeah, vitamin K2, more people are talking about. There are some preliminary studies. I think, we need a bit more information, but there was one study that showed it reduced vertebral fractures, but it didn't increase bone mineral density. So it may be enhancing the quality of the bone, not the quantity, which is what the DEXA scan, the bone mineral density number reflects. So it'll be interesting to see what research unfolds over the coming years. But they do know it does have a mechanism. I won't get into it, but there is a mechanism in relation to bone. It possibly may also reduce hip fractures in addition to vertebral fractures, but you'll see a lot of vitamin K2 added to bone support formulas. It's different than K1, which impacts clotting. K2 is a totally different thing. It may be impacting preventing fractures. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Getting a lot of minerals are really key for bone health, like trace minerals from your nuts, seeds, seaweeds, vegetables, bone broth, so anything that grows out of, plentiful soil full of minerals. Anything that's coming from the sea will have a lot of minerals, even seafood, for example. Meat can have a lot of minerals. So, those can benefit bone health as well. And then we do know certain things can impact if you're going to either not absorb the bone building nutrients from your diet, or there may impact you leaching out some of those nutrients. So things like soda, pop, cola, it's high in phosphoric acid and sugar. So you may pull some calcium out of the bones to buffer any acidity. So you want to be careful with that. You want to make sure you're taking iron and calcium at separate times of the day, because then they'll impact the absorption of one another. You want to limit and not overdo caffeine. That diuretic effect may impact how you're absorbing different nutrients. And then there's foods that are high in oxalate. So, the kale, the collard greens, the spinach, for example, if you lightly cook them, then it takes away that component because that oxalic acid may interfere with the absorption of calcium. So I know you could drive yourself crazy with all these rules, but, don't have your calcium-rich foods with a cup of coffee. Try not to have too much pop. If you're taking an iron supplement, take it at a separate time from a multi with calcium or your calcium, bone-supporting supplement. You're just going to get more benefits if you do it that way.
Yeah. And, again, there can be a number of kind of rules to kind of consider, but even overall, when you look at the foods that you eat as well, you want to really look at having more of an anti-inflammatory diet. And, there's suggestions that even in research that what could be a really good basis for an anti-inflammatory diet would be something like a Mediterranean style diet, which, Lisa, I think the last time we talked about that was when we were talking about brain health. So we'll definitely, link to that in the show notes. It's typically, a way of eating that includes foods, kind of higher fiber, more nutrient dense foods, lower saturated fat, you know, lower kind of sweets and processed foods and that kind of thing. Now, that can really be helpful for bone mineral density, especially as we get older. And even the great news is that you don't have to be perfect. Your diet doesn't have to be perfect. And you do want to look at having more nutrient-dense foods in it than, you know, a standard North American diet. And that is actually really been shown to be helpful for your bone health as well.
Definitely. And we just touched on vitamin D. We'll link to the vitamin D episode, but you do want to know your 25 hydroxy vitamin D serum level. So that's a blood test you can get done through your naturopathic doctor, like Tony or myself, or your medical doctor. You know, it doesn't cost very much. Sometimes you can be eligible for it to be covered by OHIP. It's worth it regardless, just to make sure you're actually in a good range. And a lot of patients I see don't take their vitamin D with food, and they're not taking typically enough vitamin D, but lately, especially, people have been taking vitamin D on an empty stomach. And I've had to coach them that you do need to take it with food, because vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin. You need to have a bit of fat to absorb it properly, but it's so key to direct the calcium to the bones. And we went over all the other benefits of vitamin D. So that's definitely one test to get done to assess bone health. You can also get blood levels of parathyroid hormone that may influence your bone density and how calcium is used in the body. And you can also get urinary markers of bone breakdown. So you can talk to your naturopathic doctor about those to see if you're breaking down more bone. There is a marker in the liver panel called ALP, alkaline phosphatase. And that is a nonspecific marker for liver function, but it can be a sign of bone breakdown too. So it's not the end all be all test, but if that's elevated, you may want to investigate some of these other tests further. And then just as a motivator to come back to the exercise piece, we do know exercise does improve bone density. So even walking briskly 4 to 5 times a week improves bone density. Aquatic exercise improves it as well and prevents the loss of bone density. And resistance exercise is so key as well, whether you're using weights, your own body weight. You know, you want to have someone support you, making sure you're doing the movements correctly, and over time, hopefully challenging yourself and building up the amount of pounds that you're lifting to get the most bang for your buck. And not only does the muscles pull on the bone when you're doing exercise, but exercise also supports balance, flexibility, agility. So in that case, you can reduce the risk of falls and fractures. So good to have a variety in your exercise, some of the yoga balancing poses, if you're comfortable doing that as well. But doing something that you love is key, but making sure there is some sort of strength training involved in that, and reach out to a trainer if you don't know where to start.
Absolutely. And I think really a key piece when it comes to, you know, that movement, moving our bodies when we get older, it really is, you know, doing the best you can, and also maybe even, you know, stretching out a little bit, going out of our comfort zone sometimes to like look at getting a personal trainer to really have us increase our ability to do some of those weight bearing exercises, some more resistant training, really increasing the diversity of how we're moving our bodies as well, so that we're not just getting into a rut with something like walking, which again can be helpful, but walking alone doesn't improve any kind of fractures related to osteoporosis. So, you know, it is about getting out there as much as you can. And if you can, if you do have the ability to go, get some support from a trainer, that can be incredibly helpful.
Definitely. Oh, and we forgot to mention the prunes. A lot of people are surprised by this, but
Lisa. I forgot
having
about that too.
5 prunes a day. So this was in a study with postmenopausal women. They had 5 prunes a day for over 12 months. So that's about 50 grams of prunes. And their fracture risk score, that frac score, worsened in the control group, the women that didn't have those 5 prunes a day, but their frac score, their fracture risk score was maintained in the groups that had 50 and 100 grams per day. So you can get 50 grams and you're still getting the bone mineral density preservation. You don't have to go to the 100 milligrams, which sounds like a lot, 10 prunes a day. I don't know how that would go with the digestive system, but that can be really beneficial. So getting in 50 grams, 5 prunes a day can benefit your bone health as well.
So great. Have some, you know, use those prunes for a little bit of sweetness in your diet. Have lots of olive oil, fruits and veggies, lots of protein, and then your bones will be nice and healthy and happy.
That's right.
Simple as that.
I think we've got a lot of supports here. So hopefully you're feeling proactive about your bone health. You can explore some of those tests if needed, but it's never too late to start. So don't be discouraged if you haven't been exercising. You don't have to make it hard. Make it something you enjoy. And even just a little bit every day adds up. It's even 5 minutes a day is better than 0 minutes a day. So that can make a huge difference as well.
Awesome, Lisa. So let's switch gears and get into our super mom moments and our mama mess ups. Lisa, do you have a super mom moment to share with us this week?
I do. So I planned a one night getaway with a friend and it actually happened. You know, there was no interference with kids getting sick or me or her getting sick. So we went away this past Thursday night to a place called the Trace Resort in Havelock, and they have what's called a cold camp. So it's run by a company called Stay Unbounded, and you go, you get your own chalet, you have opportunity. They have like a yoga room, meditation room, tea room, but they also have saunas, like a barrel sauna and a wood burning sauna. They have a hot tub, and then they have 2 ice holes, like I should say water holes cut out of the ice so you can do cold plunges. So when we were there, there was a group from Mexico, which is pretty funny because Canadians go to Mexico this time of the year. They came to our cold weather to go dip themselves in a partially frozen lake, but it was so interesting. They are like a club that does this sort of thing in Mexico. So this was, you know, taking it to the extreme because they'd never gone in a icy lake before, but we did breath work together. We did cold plunges together, you know, 2 to 5 minutes. It was so fascinating to meet them, to hear their stories, and then to have a getaway. It was just what I needed. And it was so nice to connect to a friend I hadn't seen in a while. So that was my super mom moment. And Tony, I know you're doing a great job, but do you have a mess up?
I wish I had a fun super mom moment like you, Lisa, to share this week. And I have a little mama mess up. It actually just happened this weekend, where we were just hanging out at home and we might have been watching one of our favorite family shows, which is Survivor. You know, it's a nice kind of, Frankie loves to watch the challenges and, you know, the different teams competing with each other. I might have just let out a little phrase where it was just, you know, just a little response reaction. I've been so good at not saying any curse words, but I did let out an S-H-I-T in front of her with an ah. So it was ah, S-H-I-T. And then she repeated it right away. And of course her daddy was right beside me and he was not happy with that. And I thought, oh, but it sounds so close to ashes. And Frankie's been kind of, you know, singing Ring Around the Rosie often. And so I was like, oh, no, Frankie, it's just ashes, ashes. We all fall down.
Good recovery.
I hope so, because she hasn't said it again. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but that was definitely a mama mess up.
Oh, it happens. The next time she like stubs her toe, she'll be like, ashes.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I think it's a great substitute, but oh well.
Fingers crossed. We do the best we can, right? Right.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks.
And Tony, I think we have a similar mama must have. Do you want to share yours first?
Yeah, I think we have a similar mama must have this week, which I think is just perfect given how we were talking about how important protein is for our bone health as we're into perimenopause and into menopause. So I am loving the Pure Paleo protein powder lately. This is my hot chocolate. I've shared about it before. And Lisa, we first heard about this from Dr. Penny Kendall Reed when you talked to her about genetics. We'll definitely link to that episode in the show notes as well. It's a hydrolyzed beef protein powder. It is really fantastic, you know, mixed with a hot liquid. I don't have mine is not very fancy at all. It's very plain. I actually just mix it with hot water and it's really delicious. I have been putting in a touch of cinnamon lately to kind of zip it up a little bit, but it's just a really great way of getting in that protein, especially when we're talking about bone health, when we're talking about balancing blood sugar, like I had used with when I was really investigating my continuous glucose levels. So I'll even, you know, link to that in the show notes as well. But that's how I've been having my hot chocolate. Lisa, it sounds like you're having a little bit fancier hot chocolate than I am.
Well, I started out, I would have like hot soy or almond milk, and then I'd add it to that and the beef protein. I know people are probably like shuddering and thinking, that's disgusting. If you could wrap your brain around it, you wouldn't even know. It has no taste of beef. It dissolves very well, and it's has sweetened with stevia. So it has a nice natural sweetness with the cocoa powder in there. But I steep like half a mug of rooibos chai tea with boiled water. I heat up some soy or almond milk, and then I add some of the Pure Paleo chocolate protein and I froth that up with my milk frother, and it's amazing. So it's kind of like a milder version of a Mayan hot chocolate, but you get the rooibos chai flavors and the chocolate and then the creaminess from whatever non-dairy milk I put in. So it's my new fave. So thanks for the reminder, Tony. I hadn't gotten the protein and I finally got it, and now I'm obsessed.
I love it. I am adding it with the rooibos chai tea, Lisa. Nice. That's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant idea. Love it. So let me just share what else is happening with both myself and Lisa. My next hypnobirthing session for expecting parents looking to decrease fear and anxiety and support their natural instincts around labor and birth is happening again next month. So you can join me at hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register. And you can sign up for Dr. Lisa's free webinar, How to Thrive in Perimenopause and Beyond. It's happening on March 29th and April 3rd. We'll have a link in the show notes to join us there. And you can also join Dr. Lisa's new Facebook group, Wild Woman Adventures Toronto. If you're in that area, you want to get out in nature, connect with other women, and push yourself out of your comfort zone. So thanks again for joining us today. Again, our show notes are available at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can email us, connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And feel free to share this episode and tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. That really helps to get the word out. And stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Until next time.